Its current state on 90.5 WKAR, Carl Good is the former director of information graphics at Newsweek magazine and at the Associated Press. Good left Newsweek after a decade to spearhead the first information graphics program at Michigan State University School of Journalism. Carl is a visual storyteller, artist, and writer who consults with corporations, scientific institutions, and government agencies to help them create understandable graphics. He also writes a regular column for the Huffington Post. Carl Good is passionate about his teaching and his MSU students. WKAR's Peter Worf joined Carl in our studio to talk about his work at MSU and beyond. They spoke about Carl Good's recent painting exhibition after more than two decades away from the art gallery.
I don't paint to sell my paintings. If someone wants to buy one, great. You know, for two reasons. I really love to paint, and if it were a job, if it were my life, if I were a painter, yeah, I would probably hate it, because I only do a couple of paintings a year. I swear a lot when I'm painting, because it's
really
not that easy for me, and I find it very frustrating. But I love it. I love the pain. It's like running to exhaustion. It's a love hate thing, and I love it. And so, but I also I think that when you just do a painting and you post it on Facebook or something, or someone comes into your house for dinner and they go, oh, you painted that. That's sort of a nice kind of little jolly, you know, artists do like their work to be seen, you know, many of us do. But if you call yourself a professional and hang it on walls and try to sell it, now you're setting yourself up for other kinds of judgment and critique that I just don't care about and I don't need in my life. My painting is just for me. So I think I'm a really good painter, and I like to paint realistically and crazy stuff, you know, crazy scenes, and I don't need people judging that, you know. So so this exhibit was hard for me because it was the first one I'd had in 22 years, and I'd only had one before, and I didn't enjoy that experience. And then this one happened, and it was fun seeing all my work together like that. And it was fun because a lot of my friends attended who had never seen it in person. They'd just seen it on Facebook or something. And so that was really fun. But I still felt this hum in my stomach of just, what are people thinking of my art? You know, who all these people I don't know, what are they thinking? And, you know, it's not what I value. It's just not important to me. And unless I'm putting myself out there, you know, it's sort of like taking off your shirt when you're 59 years old. It's like, do I really want it? You know, no, I don't. Nobody wants to see that.
This is Peter Worf for Current State. I'm speaking with Carl Good of the College of Communication Arts and Sciences here at Michigan State University, teaching information graphics, creative thinking. Let's go from painting to drawing next, Carl, because I really really gotten a kick out of some of your instructional drawing that you've done on YouTube, from the sorority girl pose drawing to how to draw a perfect butt with five lines.
Yeah.
You know, those instructional drawing videos are instructional for one thing, but they're also very playful and fun. I mean, they're funny. They're almost like stand up with drawing.
Yeah, I do. I like, well, you know, and the one on how to draw a butt was, you know, whenever I'm at a party, a cocktail party or something, you know, I'll see one of the kids who lives there, like a 10-year-old bored, you know, and I'll always want to go over to them and draw with them rather than talk, you know, holding a cheese whiz in my hand and, you know, cracker and talking to somebody that I see every day. So I'll go over and I'll draw with them, and we'll draw princesses or Spider-Man, whatever they want. But eventually, years ago, one of them said, hey, can you draw a butt? And I said, wow, a butt, huh? Well, I have no idea. I mean, I've drawn a lot of life drawing, human figures and stuff, but we worked it out to have five lines to draw a butt. And so for all the 10-year-olds in the world, I even started off the video by saying, hi, kids. Hi, kids. I'm going to show you how to draw a butt using five simple lines. Let's get started. Draw a straight line down like that. It's a little crooked, so I'll make it straight by just turning the paper. Next, let's draw an upside down V shape. That's one line, then two and three. kind of like an arrowhead in the middle down there, you know. And then now let's draw a couple of parentheses. Go a little bit higher than the top of that line and come on down. Just like that. That is a butt, everybody. And now I'm going to show you some variations on this butt. Now we're going to draw a big butt. Here we go. First, you're going to draw that line straight down the middle again.
And then you do.
So I draw this butt, you know, and actually quite a few different butts. And that video went from 1,000 views in a week to 1 million views in a day. So it's now up to 1.4 million, I think. And I have another one on drawing two-point perspective that's not funny, but it's at 2.5 million views.
Where did the sorority girl pose video come from? That figure sort of with the hand on the hip and the head back and sort of self-assured, kind of daring in a way.
Well, every single college girl in this university has pictures of her standing in the sorority or the skinny arm pose where her hand's on her hip and she hasn't, you know, there are a lot of reasons why they do that. You can look it up. But I actually reverse that in my creativity class and I get 20 guys down there. And then I have five women come up and all pose them in the proper sorority pose, and it gets a big laugh. But that goes to the point of changing, looking at things from different perspectives,
right,
and how awkward it is and uncomfortable. But that drawing, I had this idea of getting people to draw things by just using like just the numbers 1 through 0.
I thought that was fascinating. You took a line, cut it in half, cut those two in half, and then began with an S and a 5.
Yeah, there's a 5 in there, and there are numbers all throughout that. So she's all drawn with numbers, and I thought it was really an interesting challenge, and it worked out. I could draw a woman posing like that using just the numbers 1 through 9, and so I thought, well, maybe this will catch on, you know, as an instructional way of drawing. Or if nothing else, it's fun. So I put it out there. And it hasn't done too well, but it doesn't really matter. Draw a long, stretchy S going through the second from the bottom and bam, end at the bottom. So we're going from this dot through the first one up from the bottom and then hitting the bottom. We're not touching these two dots right here. Those are just reference points. Next, we're going to be drawing a 5. This will be her back, where this 5 is at an angle, and you'll be able to see it in a second. Bam, top of the 5, and then wazambo, right around that curve, and that.
This is Peter Worf for Current State. I'm speaking with Carl Good from Michigan State University's College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences. He teaches creative thinking and information graphics here at MSU, and we're talking about some of his art and his teaching and other topics here today on Current State. Carl, can we shift back again to another of the Huffington Post articles that you've published in the last year or two? One a bit more recent about, we'll shift back into the topic of college students and the helicopter parents that sometimes raise them. That struck a chord in you.
Yeah. The challenge parents have is that they love their children and they're very used to them being children, and what parents want is for you to be successful. They want you to make your money back, pay your student loans, get along in society, conform, basically have that family, the kids, the whole bit. They want that for you, and in order to do that, they know best. And so they, you know, you may be a student who wants to get into the world of country music, maybe not as a singer, just working in that field. But your parents won't pay unless you're studying nursing. Sorry, kid, but that ain't gonna fly. And this family, you're studying nursing. And I've had so many students in my office hand-wringing and crying to the point where I have now a box of permanent Kleenex next to my little chair in my office where the students sit, because so many of them come to see me about how sad, angry, frustrated they are that they have to study these things that they don't want to study because their parents won't pay for anything else. And so they're being forced into a career they don't like. And then the second thing that parents want is when you graduate, they expect you, many expect you, to step into that dream job they paid for. They paid for you to study this. You're ready. Let's hear it. One young woman was very upset because she'd been doing a restaurant job and hadn't become an advertising designer for 4 years since she'd graduated. She came to see me 4 years later, and she was crying. It was the first time I ever saw tears. I realized that tears were like, could be like Scud missiles flying out of eyeballs. She was crying. So she was just upset, and her parents were basically disowning her because she hadn't stepped into this dream job. And I said, well, tell me about this restaurant job. And she said, well, I paid off all my student loans with that job. And I said, well, good for you. If your parents haven't said that, let me be the first one to say, good for you. Awesome. And then we figured out a way that she could leverage all the contacts that she made. There were regulars who loved her, blah, 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 to start a design, graphic design business with her skills. Because she was coming to see me because she wanted to start her career in graphic design. Right. But her parents were so, they weren't speaking to her because she hadn't stepped right into that. And year after year, she hadn't gotten into it. And they'd paid for it.
What happened with her?
You know what? It's not been long enough. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the awful word ROI comes to mind when you're talking about human beings. Return on investment. Parents want to know, what's our return on investment? We paid for this. You know, what's going on? So I got mad and I wrote this Huffington Post article, you know, which is about helicopter parents and how students, how they try to control their students. And I found a study that actually said it's a health risk for students, the stress they feel. And so I quote that, I mentioned that. But, you know, but basically I try to let the, I mainly wrote it for the students to feel better about what they're going through, that they're not alone. And also some parents might have read it to go, you know, maybe we should let them pursue their dream, because it's more likely in my book that they'll be more successful and happier if they are trying to do something they love than something their parents want them to do.
Can you talk about the rant?
Well, that was a different rant. I'm starting to sound like a jerk, because I ranted at parents in that article, and then I ranted at teachers. I know nothing but wonderful teachers, and I'm not saying that. I really do. I'm surrounded by them.
I'm speaking of a recent YouTube post in which you are critical of some university teachers, professors, and their attitudes towards their students.
I would take it all the way back to kindergarten.
One of them even said, ugh, why must I stand up here and spoon feed a bunch of so-called adults? This is just like babysitting. Oh, it just blows my mind that they even think this. They are solidly adults. And if you treat them with respect, they will respond with adult respect. There are these few people.
I received an email from my cousin who lives out west, and she was in a teacher's lounge, and she said that pretty much everybody in there was bitching about their students and bitching about having to babysit. And I don't know. I don't think there were many people. I think it was two people, maybe three. But they were complaining about having to teach students who didn't want to learn, and that one of them said, I feel like I'm just babysitting every time I walk into the classroom. And she was discouraged because this was her first teaching gig. And she was, so she wrote a bunch of people she knows who teach, asking us to tell her that it's not going to be like that, that she's actually, as her idealism, her idealistic view of teaching is actually going to materialize, and it's not going to become this cynical, hated thing. And I just answered her with a rant. You know, I made a video about these teachers who, and rather than really rag so much on them, I just pointed out that I the way I see teaching as how lucky we are that these students have chosen us to teach them. They've come here to our wonderful university and chosen us to teach them, and that we need to live up to their expectations.
Relevant, really, the world is changing. Universities are changing. Information is around everywhere. Finding ways to make it an even stronger experience for students who are sitting in your classroom. What is the value proposition? standing there and me babysitting you? Is that their value proposition? And me treating you like your children? Sit there and take notes while they listen to my crap? Blah, 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 blah. What? Sitting in my classroom means something. It's worth being there. That's a pressure that we professors need to put on ourselves. Great parents know how to engage their kids.
Just spewing out knowledge and saying, hey, you know, as I said before, I'm giving them the material. They don't want to learn it. That's not my problem. You know, it is. They have a responsibility to the students to teach them. And in order to do so, they have to create an environment where learning is optimal. And they have to, and there are a few things that you can do to do that. You can actually genuinely care about them. Students seem to perform better when they feel that you really care about their learning. You have to be more engaging. Find ways to be more engaging in class, and where, you know, you're using group projects and schools, you know, students can watch a YouTube video and get a lot of the same material that some professor is blah, blah, blahing in a lecture. And so the classroom, what's the benefit of bringing students into all together in a room at 10 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays to listen to you? Blah, blah, blah. You could make a video of that, post it, and say, that's your homework. Do your homework in class. Let's all work together. Let's brainstorm. Let's work in groups. Let's have a reason we're all together. Let's have some fun here. Be playful. It doesn't have to be this top-down management. I'm the expert. You're the dummies. Listen to me. And if you're on Facebook, everyone starts getting on Facebook and they get pissed off because, wow, how rude. Hey, you know, you're 50% to blame for that. You should be much more engaging to these kids. And then they won't be on Facebook. Some of them will, a few, but believe me, they won't be on Facebook.
Carl Good teaches information graphics and creative thinking at the Michigan State University's College of Communication Arts and Sciences. Carl, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Nice to be here. This is fun. What a cool studio.
For Current State, this is Peter Whorf.